Thanks, everyone. Hey there, everyone. This is Tammy Newman from Conversations in Care, and I'm so glad that you have the opportunity to join us today. We are talking about nursing homes, and we're talking about how maybe we can look at how we tour the nursing homes to maybe avoid some potential pitfalls when we place a loved one in those nursing homes. And this stems from a story that was shared with me online by a handful of my friends from Michigan, because since I'm a Michigan transplant and now I live in Indiana, I still have my ties there in the industry, and everybody wanted to let me know that one of the nursing homes in the area, actually an assisted living memory care community, was actually shut down earlier this week. And it spurred a lot of things, you know, in my mind. So I decided to have a couple of really great advocates and experts on the show to kind of talk about, you know, how can we tour a nursing home to really see that it is worth our time to place our loved one there. And also, you know, if we have time, we're going to touch on a little bit on why do nursing homes fail? Why do living fail? If we can't get it to today, we're going to do that in a second show for all of you. So I want to introduce you to my first guest. This is Kathy Braxton. She is the Chief Education Officer of Silver Dawn Training Institute. Kathy, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks, Tammy. Thanks for having me. I'm really glad to talk about this topic. It's one that's near and dear to my heart.
I know it is, and I think what was interesting to me was it was kind of hilarious. I kept getting all these direct messages on Facebook on Tuesday with the link to this story, and it was actually a community company, and I made the decision not to be employed there. I got the offer, but I decided that I wasn't going to work for them. So it's very interesting to see how life turns out. But this nursing home had they had gone through their state survey, which is the survey in which the state comes in to make sure that they're abiding by all the regulations that are out there for nursing homes and assisted living and memory care communities. They were given their report, and it wasn't a very good report. And then they were given a certain amount of time to correct those issues. And when they came back, they weren't really corrected to what the state was looking for, and they ended up putting in that day a mandate that the license was revoked, was suspended, and that the doors were closed and the residents had to be moved elsewhere by that evening. So it was really interesting for me to really see this and what was happening in my hometown, but it also really brought back the importance of being able to really learn how to tour and understand what is involved in that process. I think also, you know, as I talked, you know, if we can touch on that today, let's talk about how, you know, why nursing homes do fail. And as I said, if not, we'll get to that next week. But I think this was, I'm thankful for you, Kathy, for being on here. And I'm going to bring on our other expert, Tony Fisher. So, Tony, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Tammy.
Absolutely. So, Tony Fisher, you own a company called Elder Advocacy Group, and you actually live in the Michigan area. And I kind of gave a brief, quick overview of what I saw in the news, and I don't know, maybe you're there, maybe you have a little bit more information about what you heard and what you saw in regards to this case.
No, I mean, you were pretty accurate in, you know, in relation to what's been on the local news here. I mean, it's heartbreaking seeing, you know, confused residents and families, you know, having to frantically find another place to, another safe place for their loved one to be. And it's really a heartbreaking scene. And it's, as an advocate, it makes me very angry to see somebody who's just, you know, just out of negligence, you know, having their building closed, and then, you know, when those folks are depending on that particular nursing center, assisted living, to care for their loved ones, it's really heartbreaking and infuriating as an advocate.
Absolutely. It was very saddening for me to see the report, and it was something that I did share with Kathy. But one of the things, this led me to going back to my early days at Conversations in Care, and Tony, when I had you on, we talked a lot about, you know, how we can tour a community and what some of the things are to really look for. And maybe I'm going to actually start with Kathy on this. Kathy, I want you to give me one thing that you think is really important that people may not know about a nursing home that they really should, you know, be on the lookout for, or they should search for. What can you give us a quick tip for what we should be
looking
for?
I'm going to give you two quick tips. One of them is based on something you talked about, which was you actually potentially working there. You had shared this information with me earlier and said you decided not to take that job, but you couldn't quite put your finger on why. And I think the thing is, you've got to go with your gut. If something doesn't feel right and you even cannot put it into words, use that. Use that to know something doesn't feel right. And you did that by not taking that job. And I think families walk in and they may have a gut feeling about something, but they choose to ignore it because they're being bombarded with so much information. It is really important to use your gut. Take notes right after you walk out of that facility. Didn't feel good. Something felt funny. Whatever the case may be, to keep that in the fresh, you know, front part of your mind. And I think the second thing I'm leading to is, you know, every person who walks into that facility has the right to ask for their most recent survey done by the state. You have the right to ask for it, and they, by law, have to provide that for you. And I think it's really important, especially in a case like this, if someone had recently moved their loved one into this assisted living or the memory care that we're talking about, if they had looked at the survey results, they may have seen that there were some serious red flags. And again, that's going to help that gut reaction you may have may solidify, okay, now maybe I understand why I don't feel so good about this. Because you have the rights to look at that. You have the rights to ask questions about it and what their action plans are. And that should be posted or made available to you.
Absolutely. I think those are some really great things that we should be looking at. You know, I think using your gut is important. You know, and asking for that survey actually should be in plain sight when you walk into the building, and it should be documented as such. And so I think those are some amazing things, and not many people know that you can ask for that survey, so thank you for sharing that with everyone that's listening. And Tony, I want to go to you because I know in the past you wrote a couple of really great blog articles about not only touring, but why that first day is so important and things of that nature. What can you add into this concept of touring communities that we should be looking for?
Well, I wanted to actually tag on to Kathy's great advice, too, especially the second portion. It is everyone's right to look at the survey and critique that. However, as an insider, I want to give everyone a kind of a dirty little secret. Surveys, and it shouldn't happen this way, but especially in nursing homes, surveyors survey homes differently depending on who they're owned by and what community they're in. Now, that shouldn't be the norm, but I've seen it happen. I've seen homes that you would look at that get a 5-star rating, and you would tour them and say, there's no way this place is getting a 5-star rating. And then you go to a place in another area where there's a 3-star rating, and you're like, well, why does this place have 5 stars? And
right.
It really kind of depends on factors that have nothing to do with regulations as much as it has to do with, you know, whether they're located in the inner city or not, or whether or not that companies owned by a small owner or a big owner, and, you know, bigger owners can pay more fines. So sometimes they're a little more scrupulous on that. So, I mean, that's, you know, maybe a little bit of a controversial thing to say, but it's a real situation that happens every year, especially in the state of Michigan, and it's something that people really need to look at. So although the survey is important, if you look at the survey, and you kind of going back to the first thing that Kathy brought up, going with your gut, you know, if you're thinking, well, you know, this place doesn't match what the survey says, you know, then you really kind of have to use common sense at that point and kind of go with the latter thought. And then continuing on that vein as well, you also have to understand the licensure of the place you're going through. Like in Chicago and Illinois, you guys have a lot more regulation than we do here in Michigan. In Michigan, the vast majority of assisted livings don't have any licensure at all. So because they don't have any licensure, there's no survey to look at. So mm-hmm. what you really need to do at that point is, go with the gut feeling in relation to the feel, but also, try to get some references in relation to that assisted living. You know, ask some of the folks that live there how the care is, and really kind of use your own eyes when you're going on that tour to see, the type of folks are there and how they look, how the place smells, how it's cleaned. If there's like little things that are off here and there, like for example, if you're walking up outside, and this kind of alludes to some of those things I've written, Tammy, if you're walking up outside and you see that the parking lot's in disrepair and the flower beds are overgrown with weeds, or you walk inside and the carpet's just not really quite right up front in the reception area, and it looks kind of dirty and worn out, chances are that that owner's kind of maybe skimping not only on physical plan issues, but on other things like employee benefits, employee pay. All those things can really kind of compromise what the kind of care that your loved one is getting at the assisted living.
Absolutely. Now, I know Kathy kind of indicated to me that she wants to add something to what you were stating, but before I let her add to that, there was a quick question that came to mind that I kind of want your insight on, Tony. I know you kind of alluded to, depending on where that nursing home or assisted living is kind of located, the survey is different based on that. I've also heard, and this is why I'm asking the question. I don't know if this is true. I've also heard that in some areas where there's a great need for beds, we've got full communities and we still need to fill those beds with other people in need, that the survey may not be as difficult in those areas as well.
Yeah, they may not scrutinize a facility that is in an area where it's maybe a hard neighborhood or a neighborhood that's been hard hit or a place where there isn't a lot of other nursing centers around. Because if the state goes in and they have to cite that nursing center, and those citations lead to the criteria for closure of that nursing center, the state is then responsible for helping place all of those people. So logistically, they try to avoid that catastrophe, and it would be a catastrophe for that community, whether it be a rural community where there's only one nursing center in like 30 square miles, or whether it be in the inner city where most of the folks are on some type of public assistance type insurance like Medicaid, and it's difficult to find placement for those folks within the area that they live, and we have to send them maybe 30, 40 miles out to another place. The state is then responsible for placing those residents and supervising that process, and that costs time and money. And, unfortunately, at that point, it becomes more of a business decision than it is a decision about the overall health and wellness of the facility. Now, that said, if a facility like that has a situation that's really really bad, the state will work with them, work with that facility to fix the issue. It's not like they ignore the public safety issue at that point. But they're less likely to scrutinize harshly a facility in that area, and that would affect their rating to where it would skew it to a more positive look when you talk about Nursing Home Compare and their survey ratings.
Absolutely. So Kathy, I want you to, I know you wanted to expand on something that Tony may have said or add to that. Could you share what your thoughts are as well?
Sure. First of all, I thought that point that Tony made about what the outside is a great mirror image of potentially what could be going on the inside with staff mm-hmm. benefits and so on. I mean, that hits the nail right on the head. I mean, potentially our next conversation is going to be, why do nursing homes fail? And is it because we're not treating our staff in a way that retains them? And is the outside facade a good indication of that? I mean, they say you don't judge a book by its cover, but you do have to take everything into consideration. And I think that's a great tip to just keep in mind. You can't base your decision on one thing, whether it's the parking lot or the disarray of a carpet. However, compiling all of that's going to definitely help. The other thing I've always done is when I have counseled families in regards to touring nursing homes, when they've moved on to a higher need of care, I've often encouraged them to go for a tour twice, at least twice. The first tour, I always tell them, make an appointment. You're going to want to speak to your marketing director there, and they're going to give you a lovely tour. Usually it's in the height of the day when you've got the majority of your staff available. They're going to walk you through and show you the beautifications of everything going on there. And my advice to people is if you're happy with that tour, you walked out with a pretty good feeling, my suggestion is go back again and go back around 5:30, 6 o'clock. When dinner's being served, when there's more of a skeleton crew present, you're going to get possibly a whole nother look as to what's going on in that building. Are the residents eating their food? Are they pushing it away? Does it smell good? Does it smell like something you would want to eat? Are people just being lined up in the hallway? Are the staff there still engaging? I know in Illinois, when I worked in the nursing home industry, there was always a staff member, some type of management staff member that had to be on staff until at least 7 o'clock for those last-minute kind of evening walk-in tours. And I gave quite a few of those myself. And I actually encouraged people to come at that time because I think it's a great way for them to see. You might see what's going on at, you know, from 10 to 2, but you need to see what's going on after hours when your loved one is being fed dinner and getting ready for a shower or bathing time. And that's a really important thing to see. It's going to add the value of that walkthrough.
I think that's a fabulous idea. I have always encouraged people to go at different times, go at times, you know, that they're not expecting anybody to come, because you definitely, there's two different looks to what the nursing home looks like and feels like, and I think that's a fabulous idea on your part. Tony, before I move to my next question, are there any other things that you think people should be looking at when it comes to touring that nursing home and getting that first feel for what's going on?
I'm sorry, say again, Tammy, you broke up just a second there. I apologize.
I apologize. I just was asking before I move on to our next question if there were any other things that you thought were important that for when a family is going to tour a nursing home.
Yeah, I mean, you want to make sure, Kathy, once again, right on target with going at different times as well. You know, that's important. You can also look when you're walking around the facility, you know, in relation to odors. You know, odors in nursing centers happen. I mean, do you have 50 to 100 people in one spot? Odors happen. It's just how those odors are handled that really kind of differentiates what, you know, a good housekeeping/nursing situation is. If you run into like a pocket of odors when you're walking around the facility and they go away and the rest of the place smells great, that's something that can kind of be expected every once in a while. But if you're walking throughout the entire place and there's a constant smell of, you know, either like just kind of a body odor stench or a urine stench, not to be gross, you might have a situation to where not only is maybe housekeeping not doing what they're supposed to be doing, but maybe the nursing staff and those folks are not being as diligent as they should be in relation to incontinence care.
Absolutely. I think that's some great advice. I know people think that automatically that's a no to the situation, to be someone there. But definitely it begs to kind of figure that out a little bit. You know, is it in one spot? Is it as soon as I walk in the door, am I punched right in the face with that smell? then that's something totally different than I walked by someone's room and that smell was there, and then when I moved down the hall, it's not there. So I think that Kathy, what would you say? Is that something that you would agree with in regards to this?
Absolutely. I've always warned people, you know, isolated odors are things we cannot avoid. Just like Tony said, we're housing a lot of people who have multiple different levels of continence and incontinence needs. So isolated odors, you have to be expected. But, yeah, you walk in the front door and you're immediately turned off. You know, continue to note it through your tour. You know, is it coming from a specific place that's close by? Or is it just throughout the whole place you're just getting, you know, where you want to plug your nose? And that's, you know, you're probably not going to want to go back when you smell that. Right. I have one more thing to add, if that's okay, with something that came to my mind. I know in Illinois it's okay to do this. I'm not sure what it's like in Michigan. But when you ask for the staff-to-resident ratio, I know in Illinois they can include your dietary staff, your management or your maintenance staff, your housekeeping staff. They can include that in that ratio. And you have to know that those people are not necessarily people working one-on-one, hands-on with the residents in that building. The ratio does not just include, you know, your nursing, your CNAs, or your activity staff. It includes every person employed in that building. So you're going to want to look for that, the highest ratio possible, considering that.
So that begs brings to me the question that, so maybe the better question when you're on a tour, what is the nurse ratio or the CNA to resident ratio? Asking what is the staff ratio.
Yeah, I would agree. If you just ask for that ratio, they're going to give you what they can, and what they can do is give you everybody involved, even when they're behind the scenes and are never seen because they're in the kitchen. Asking for that nursing and CNA ratio to staff, and asking for it regarding all three shifts. How far down do they go with that staffing ratio when it's the midnight shift?
Yeah, I think that's important. Those are important things. Thanks, Kathy. Thank you. So before we go, we have a... They were talking about the fact that by noon, the state had made the determination that that facility had to close. So that meant all the residents had to leave the facility at that time. I want to say they wanted to get everyone out, I think, by 8 or something. I could be wrong on that time, so don't quote me on that. And I think it behooves us to understand what the process is when something like this happens. And Tony, I know you have a lot of knowledge in this area, and I remember when I worked in Michigan, oftentimes what would happen is if a facility down the road would be in that situation, at that point, a lot of the other facilities around them would come to the rescue and bring patients into whatever available rooms that they have. So maybe you can shed some more light onto that, Tony.
Yeah, I mean, there's the other facilities who might have open beds are always going to be willing to take some of those folks in. Especially when you're talking about a nursing home where, you know, some of those folks might be, they're under insurance coverage and things of that nature. When you're talking about a memory care, though, it becomes a little more difficult. Memory care is speaking specifically for Michigan and its particular area. You know, there's quite a few of them, but they're not all like just down the street. So that was a little more of a situation for the family members in relation to finding a placement on that. But I do want to add on to this whole thing, this whole notion of, you know, them deciding at noon and then closing at 8, the facility. You know, that's really kind of something that, you know, the regulators and the fire marshal and the folks who were responsible for this whole process really needed to take into consideration. They should have really worked with the facility, not for the owner's sake, but for the family member's sake in relation to maybe putting in some temporary safety measures to be able to make that process a little longer. It was a real, it's a, and that just kind of goes to the underlying problem in dementia education, which is an entire another show, but folks don't really understand what memory care is or what it takes to take care of someone with Alzheimer's disease and dementia. So, you know, that disconnect, I think, in the community causes problems like this, but it causes problems in other areas as well.
Absolutely. I think that I appreciate you sharing that information, too, because I think, you know, there's, you know, and I don't necessarily know the regulations in Michigan and how they make that determination once they go into the building and decide that that's going to happen. You know, like you said, were there some temporary safety measures that could have been put in place that could give people a little bit more time to make those decisions and get people in the proper care place? You know, I don't know. That could have helped. But, you know, I think it's important for families to sometimes to kind of understand what that process is, too. We don't often think about that, obviously. We really want to be armed with the fact that we've placed our loved one in a place that's safe. But, you know, sometimes things happen and things change. And I think understanding this process is really important. Kathy, yeah. I don't know, in Illinois, if you've ever seen this type of thing happen and what you've seen and how that happened in Illinois, maybe compared to Michigan.
What I have seen has not been a facility closed because of a survey, but I've seen it shut down because of a fire, which I was involved in. I didn't actually start the fire. Just we had a fire in our building, and it was an immediate fire marshal call that everyone needed to go. And residents and families were given not even 8 hours. They were maybe given 3. We fortunately had a nursing home across the street that rallied together, had a floor that they were in the process of renovating, so had quite a few beds available, and our most vulnerable residents went there immediately. Families were called in to take their loved ones that night because they could not, for safety reasons, because of the fire, stay. So it was one of those situations where it had to happen fast. We did have quite a few, that nursing home across the street, one down the street, rallied together, as you said. It was a different type of situation. But again, it was definitely moving the more vulnerable residents to those facilities that understood the memory care issues or the higher acuity issues, whereas your lower acuity residents were able to be housed with their family for a short period of time until we found them alternative housing within the next, you know, couple days to a week. So that's how I have seen that happen.
You know what, and I thank you for sharing that information. I think that's something that we also should have families being aware of, that when they go and tour is, you know, asking the question, if something were to happen, such as a fire, you know, a bad storm that causes something else, you know, what are the contingency plans that are in place? So I thank you for bringing that up. We are about almost out of time, but before I go, I want to thank both of you for being here on the show. And I was wondering, Kathy, real quickly, how can people get in touch with you from Silver Dawn Training Institute? Is there a quick website they can go to and reach out and ask you more questions?
They can go to dementiaraw.com. That's dementiaraw.com, and get in touch with us there. We'd love to hear anybody.
Absolutely. Now, Tony, Elder Advocacy Group, how can they get in touch with you?
They can info@elderadvocacygroup.info. That's pretty much the easiest address to get to. They can also just log on to the website, and there's ways that you can click on buttons to be in immediate contact with myself or another elder care coordinator.
That's fabulous. I want to thank both of you for being on the show today. We are going to come back with you next week and share some other ideas in regards to how we can, you know, whether it's looking at this in a different way, why are nursing homes? I know Kathy's got a lot to stand up on a soapbox about, but join us next week for that show, and we look forward to having you there, and be well.